Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Roundtable, coming to you from Beijing. I'm He Young. Good to have you join us. It's estimated that over 30 million kids in China learn to play the piano a year. However, recent data indicates a significant drop in interest in piano education. While the demand for piano lessons may be on the decline, the value of music education should still strike a chord, right? We discuss. And we share with you what's brought us joy this week, what's made us happy in Roundtable's Happy Place. For today's program, I'm joined by Xin Yu in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. First on today's show. The piano, often hailed as the king of instruments, enjoyed a golden age in China, especially among millennials born in the 1980s and 1990s, many of whom likely have childhood memories of either taking piano lessons themselves or having classmates who did. World-class superstar pianists such as Long Long and Yu Jia Wang have ascended as defining symbols of that era. For decades, there was a high demand for piano education, which in turn fueled various piano-related industries, from manufacturing to tutoring. However, in recent years, the enthusiasm surrounding the piano appears to have been waning in this country. So before we talk about what factors have contributed to this decline in the piano craze, let's take a step back and see what are the driving forces behind the piano craze early on in the 1980s and 1990s in this country.
Yeah, so back in the 1980s and 1990s, we definitely saw rapid economic growth in this country. And as people have more disposable income, they were having a more financial capacity to purchase pianos, actually, and also the proficiency in playing the piano marked as a symbol of your social status. So in some way, it can be seen as a conspicuous consumption to show off your wealth or social standing in a way. And I think the key driving factor is that as the economy develops, people place greater emphasis on education, especially for Chinese parents. They were more willing to invest more on the education of their children. And this is intertwined with China's ultra-competitive schooling, with this new policy launched in 1987. It says that students with artistic talents, they can get additional points in their high school or college entrance examinations. So by obtaining a certain credentials in instruments, students could enjoy an additional 10 points on entrance exams. So given how competitive school advancement was in China, learning to play the piano served as an academic investment. So families endured great expenses for lessons, not just for these well-off families. Those poorer families, they were spending thousands of yuan on buying the piano and also providing lessons for their kids. They were willing to sacrifice their quality of life even to make sure that they can get this additional points during this school advancement. And also, like you said, piano stars like Long Long, and also in 1992, French pianist Richard Clayderman, he undertook a popular tour across the cities in China. So all of this really played a significant role in shaping how people perceive the piano and this special cultural value it entails.
What you just said about the family sort of maximizing its resources and all in the hope of pushing this child into becoming a piano prodigy kind of story was pretty much publicized by Long Long and his father. And apparently, bear in mind, the two didn't have a very good relationship for years. And it had a lot to do with this wolf dad parenting, apparently. But I think they've reconciled by now. So it's an interesting window to look at, I suppose, economic development and how individual households and also sort of like parental expectation for their kids. And there are a lot of things of the socioeconomic story that you can tell or you can gather from, you know, just taking a piano lessons of these families in China. And Josh, I'm curious to hear, you know, what is the piano or sort of like classical music education education situation like in your country. Also, I invite you to share your thoughts on your reaction to what Xingyu has said about this whole thing.
Yeah, I find it really fascinating because I also learned to play the piano first, I think, when I was a kid. And in the UK, and I think in most Western countries, the piano also holds quite a high social status and has, you know, is really connected to this idea of prestige and cultural refinement and things like this. It is a symbol of wealth, you know, to have a piano in the home. It's big. It's usually, well, you can actually pick up pianos quite relatively cheap. In fact, people give them away for free a lot of the time these days, because they become an annoyance when people inevitably don't play them anymore. But generally, you know, they can be very expensive. They take up a lot of space. So in order to have one, you know, you would need a big home or something like this. And so it also holds a pretty significant space in the Western world as well. Mm-hmm. But also, like in China, its popularity has increased and decreased over time. And I think that there's quite a lot of interesting reasons for this. But I mean, when I see these stories, I think about it from like the musical perspective, because aside from its sort of economic prestige, there is also a reason why the piano as a musical instrument, just musically, is often one of the first instruments that you play.
Tell us about that.
The piano. Yeah, sure. Well, I think that aside from accessibility, which of course is, it depends where you are in the world, but generally speaking, most, for example, schools will have one or two pianos in them, right? Hopefully, mm-hmm. right? Maybe not every school, but if it's like a big high school, there's probably a piano somewhere in that school, right? Usually a couple. So it's quite accessible. They're quite durable in comparison to some instruments. So the most popular instrument in the world, the most easiest to attain, one of the cheapest, is the guitar, the six-string guitar, right? It is not the easiest instrument to learn, but the problem is that it can break easily. The strings can, you know, get rusty, and you have to tune it, and it has to be really well maintained, or it's really difficult to play. Pianos also have to be well maintained, but mm-hmm. they're a bit more durable. Also, as a foundational musical skill, the piano is visually a really great way to start playing music, because when you think about things like music theory, you can literally see all of the notes in front of you. Other instruments aren't necessarily like this. You can't see them all at once. In fact, a lot of instruments, you can't see anything. If you take the flute, for example, you can't see anything, right? You have to rely on muscle memory and things like this. So as a visual representation, the layout of the keyboard is really good. Also, if you get really good at piano, it's also a fantastic solo instrument. You don't see so many other instruments being played alone, right? But you could go to a piano concert, because we call it the sonic spectrum, right? So it's like the low sounds to the high sounds. Most instruments just occupy one space in that spectrum. In an orchestra, for example, the flute would be up there, and then you might have a cello down there, right? But a piano can actually occupy all of that space, right? From the low notes to the high notes. So also, it's very versatile. So it makes a lot of sense from a musical perspective as well.
Yes, and it's great to have you join this discussion. As you know, Josh, you've played the piano and you're a musician, so there are some interesting things you can share with us. And yeah, there are many things I'd like to echo with what you just said, Josh. Actually, I've seen exactly the same thing here in China in my neighborhood. When you say that, oh, after years since the first person who owned the piano and maybe played for some time and then given up, and then this big chunky thing, I'm sorry, the musical instrument becomes a bit of an annoyance. And I remember few years back, I guess it's, you know, those kids who were the first generation playing the piano in their family and then probably ditched it ages ago. Now they're all grown up. Hello, folks of the millennial and maybe the older Gen Z people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's this big chunky thing left in their ancestral home, and their parents, their elderly parents, are left with the responsibility of either keeping it or getting rid of it. And then in my neighborhood, once there were like five idle pianos who were looking for new owners, but failed. And then, you know, I think it's all subject to that same era of, you know, just people's, there was this popularity or this penchant of people hoping big for their kids. And parents are often like, if I didn't get to do this, I would want my only child to be able to enjoy this. And this is quite the investment. And it doesn't always pan out exactly the way you planned.
Yeah, but I also think that the downside of this whole piano craze thing in China is that many of Chinese parents, they focus too much on the exam-oriented piano lessons, you know. They want their children to get these credentials as fast as possible. So they're not just looking at how they're going to develop their musical talents, but they are focusing on how they can get their additional points in their entrance exams. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the aspects that I don't like about it.
Yeah. Can I also just quickly ask Josh if it's the same in the UK, that there is this like rigid grade system that you need to pass different exams to proceed to the next grade to prove that you are, you've excelled in this level of piano playing. And in China, we do have this kind of system. And it is about climbing the grades, because otherwise, how do you prove that you are great at this and get extra points in your Gaokao examination? Or actually for like middle school or high school entrance examinations, sometimes this counts in as well. So there's definitely a motivation for kids and their parents to like go through this examination system in piano education. Yeah. So is there something similar in the UK? And would this sort of compromise or in a way motivate people to sort of put in more into practicing and going further of the piano?
Yeah, there's a very rigid grading system, which is I think internationally recognized actually, but in Western classical music, there's something called the Associated Board of the Royal Schools of Music, the ABR. SM, which I'm quite familiar with, because although I ended up pursuing sort of more alternative, like song production, going into producing rather than performing on one instrument, I had to do this back when I was a kid. I had to do music theory exams, and these usually go from 1 to 8. And you will see, you'll often hear, you probably heard it yourself, people talking about being a grade 8 musician, right? They will really use this as sort of the standard if you pass all your grades. Very, very difficult to achieve this grade 8, actually. And if you go above the grade 8, it's called a diploma. If you go to the diploma levels, they can even be considered on par with like a bachelor's degree or something like that. And depending on, because they're so difficult to get. And if it depends on your career choice, of course, right? You know, maybe not all, I'm not saying all companies would respect it as the same as that, but definitely in the musical world, you know, they're considered to be very prestigious and a real mark of quality and professionalism.
So do you think this
is some pressure?
Yeah. Do you think this has the positive or maybe sometimes negative effect on people's pursuit of piano education? Because also it's like, you know, is it about getting the grades or is it about pursuing the love for music, you know, which doesn't necessarily put the bread and butter on the dinner table or whatnot, or bacon, whatever your diet is. So you get what you mean.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. But I think that that's also a difficult question to answer about any subject, right? Whether or not exams are a good thing, you know.
That's why you need to answer.
Yeah, when it comes to Well, I think that when it comes to musical expression, I do think that grading systems can often stifle people's ability to express themselves and really discover their love for music. I think that if one really enjoys playing music and likes to use music to express themselves, I think that often it doesn't really matter too much what the instrument is. It does to some degree, but I think, you know, if you love music and you have the ability to do it, you could probably have a good go at playing any instrument. That's my personal opinion. Some people might disagree with me. And I do think that sometimes these grades can stop people from being able to express themselves more freely. I think that's why the guitar is a beautiful instrument. I'm very biased because that's my instrument. It's the only instrument that I play to a professional level. And I never did my classical grades for guitar, really. I did a few when I was younger, but, you know, it's just the best instrument really for expressing yourself in a popular music kind of way, I think. But you could do the same on any instrument, but certain instruments, especially if they're quite niche, I would say that, again, like if you take a niche orchestral instrument like the tuba, do you know what that instrument is? It's like a big, It's a massive brass instrument that's very low. Yeah. So like that's quite tricky to find a teacher to even teach you that instrument, you know? And so sometimes these grading systems, I think they can help to some degree because, you know, they can give you some sort of structure. And some people, their brains just love that kind of structure and discipline. Yeah. My dad is an incredible guitarist and he did all of his grades in every style of guitar. And he loves it because he's a complete nerd, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm only joking. I'm saying that's because my dad, so I'm allowed. But I really respect so many people that manage to pursue these things and go through the grading systems. And it definitely benefits some people.
Yeah, speaking of, you know, just the popularity of this instrument in China for years, actually now I think we can see some of the effects of it. I just want to also bring in one point that Yu Jiawang, you know, she has really created quite the craze in China, like in the last couple of months, and her concert is completely sold out. And then congratulations to her for just winning a Grammy Award. So the first of a Chinese woman ever. And she was born in 1987, and she's one of those generation of kids, one of those 30 million kids playing the piano a year kind of thing. And what kind of effect did this bring to the whole industry related to the piano? So Xingyue, tell us about the impact of so many people playing the piano, and it must have brought up the whole industry.
Yes, definitely. So this whole piano craze, they fuel the explosive growth both in piano sales and also piano lessons in China. So in terms of the piano, we have seen the domestic brands like Pearl River expanded greatly in the country, and also some of the European and also Western brands, they also thrived in China. And also apart from that, with more Chinese parents, they're sending their kids to this piano tutoring. And we have seen some of the piano teachers, they were so overwhelmed by the number of piano lessons, you know. According to one of the anecdotes that I've read online, this piano teacher, she has been working at a children's palace. It's a public facility in China where children engage in extracurricular activities. She has been working as a piano teacher for over 30 years. And she says that during the period between 1990 to 2010, this marked a peak of her career where she simply had so many students that she couldn't handle them all. And many parents would set a teaching goal for the teachers to educate, to teach their children to reach a certain level of credentials before high school entrance examination. And some of these prices of the piano lessons, I think they cost around hundreds of yuan at the time. Mm-hmm. But still, many parents, they were so determined to scrape every penny to send their children to learn the instrument. So that's the prime time for the whole piano education and also piano sales in China.
Yes, and I looked up some numbers. According to the statistics from the China Music Association, it's estimated that China produces approximately 370 million pianos.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot a year. And wait for this, 2.5 million violins each year, exceeding the quantity of any other country in the world. And also, apparently, if you go by the estimates of 30 million kids playing the piano a year, then that's like about 80% of all kids learning the piano across the world. So you're talking about big numbers, but considering the size of our population, I guess the numbers aren't always that surprising. Now, fast forward to today. Is it true that we're seeing a drop in the interest of piano playing in this country?
Yeah, definitely. So earlier this year, we have seen hot topics on social media platforms revolving around this cliff-like decline in piano sales. So the report shows that two of China's largest piano manufacturers, the Pearl River Piano Group and also the Heilun Piano, they recorded year-on-year revenue drops of over 20% in 2023. And other report also says that pianos that were once selling for 50,000 yuan, they can now be purchased for as little as 5,000 yuan. So that's 1/10 of the original price. And even so, pianos, they hardly sell in many parts of the countries.
But also I like to highlight, there are so many secondhand pianos out there that they need to find new owners.
Yes.
And yeah, Josh, what do you think are the possible factors contributing to this huge drop in numbers or this decline in interest in piano playing?
Well, I think that there's many factors, and I'll try to identify a few of the most significant ones in my opinion. So I definitely think that changing educational priorities are a big one. I think that in the my own country, in the UK, also in the US, and I imagine so in China as well, there's more of an emphasis on STEM subjects, STEM, right? So science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And although I think that music, and again, I know I'm biased, I think that this integrates perfectly within a lot of these things. I think that, you know, learning to play an instrument helps your cognitive development so much. And there's been so many studies that suggest that the ability to read music, or not even read it, but be able to play an instrument and being good at, say, mathematics, there's a huge correlation there. But anyway, I move on. There is still a greater focus on this in education. I think that there is a big cultural shift when it comes to musical instruments. There's a lot more accessible alternatives, such as digital music platforms, digital music production. There's also more of a preference for digital music, electronic music, for example, as opposed to classical music. And I think that, you know, younger generations these days, although there will always, I believe, be an appreciation for instruments and classical music, I think that this is waning. I think the rise of digital music production and electronic music and things like this has led a lot of aspiring musicians to, you know, prioritize learning other music production skills or other musical instruments, such as, you know, guitar, drums, or just using DAWs, DAWs, which are things like Ableton, Logic, Pro Tools, which are basically all you need is your laptop and you can produce a whole music track with it. You know, you have a lot of power. So who's going to get a piano in their house when you can just take your laptop anywhere in the world and create a masterpiece?
Yeah, I'd like to just add a bit of background here for the educational policy shift in China. Like I said before, there was this additional points given to students with artistic talents, but that policy was abolished in 2008. So suddenly, Chinese parents saw that learning the piano might not be so helpful in getting them to a better school. So that's kind of, without this tangible academic benefits, there's a whole shift of how you see the piano playing and piano learning in China. And also, I think today's Chinese parents, they have access to a much more diverse world of musical instruments. According to my previous interviews on some of the musicians, the young ones, they're shooting their musical videos on some of the video streaming platforms, and they have been gaining great popularity among young Chinese music lovers, and they are popularizing some of the traditional Chinese instruments like the guzheng and the pipa. And some of the interviewees say that nowadays an increasing number of Chinese young students, they are more interested in traditional Chinese instruments instead of the popular ones back then. So I think there is a whole shift of perception as well.
All right. And also just consider that today's parents are most likely the first generation kids who were playing the piano when they were kids. So they probably have a different kind of look over music education as well as just playing the piano. Maybe it's not that big a deal to them anymore. But it's important to cultivate interest, and I still think there's great value in music education. And if you can cultivate that lifelong appreciation of music and finding it as an emotional outlet as well, and I think there are just many benefits that come with having music as a big part of this personal journey that we take in this world. We'll be back after this break.